This is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. This is a half-hour conversation with anything that's on your mind. You know the format. I bring in enough articles for about 3 hours of talk show, and then the phone begins to ring, and we talk about what you want to talk about. I'll start out with some articles that are of interest that I hope you find of interest also. If you want to call here, any questions you want about the research that I have on with World Watchers, it's on from 8 to 9. Call 375-3082. I can give you some information on sources of books or research or how to research, or you share with me. Many of the listeners have been calling in with new books that they've purchased. And, oh, there's a call now. Well, we'll put the articles away and get to the calls because that's what it's about. Hello?
Yes, calling from Santa Cruz.
Okay.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm feeling good.
Okay.
And I'm a little bit upset. And I wanted to talk about that a bit. I'm upset because I went to one of the UC graduation ceremonies.
Uh-huh.
And the topic was brought up.
Which one specifically?
The Santa Cruz.
The University of California,
yes.
Or Cabrillo, or is it UC?
Santa Cruz.
Okay, go on.
Yes. Two speakers, one a student and the other a professor, brought up this incident where our good ambassador Jean Kirkpatrick was shouted down at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they both felt that it's just too bad.
Mm-hmm.
That the other side can't be heard, and it's sort of a, you know, reverse discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking about this, and I've come to one conclusion, and I wanted to express it and get your response.
Mm-hmm.
And that conclusion is that I think most liberals are utterly confused.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to think, especially the ones in the university, they seem to have this notion that all ideas exist on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And that an idea like racism and genocide,
mm-hmm,
somehow exists on a one-to-one relationship with ideas of freedom and life.
Well, let me just say one thing, and then we'll go on with it.
Yeah.
When you use the word like the liberals are confused, you go under the assumption that the liberals were opposing Jean Kirkpatrick. And if you get out your history books, and I have a whole wall of just the agent provocateurs in the CIA in the Nixon era, when Richard Nixon was up in San Jose, there were rocks thrown at his car. You remember when he was campaigning? And there were large speeches about, we can't condone this kind of attitude, he should be able to speak. And then at the time of Watergate, it turned out that he had paid the people to throw them, to come down on a group which you may think liberal, but really are not throwing the rocks. And at the time of Watergate also, it came out in Senator Church's committee and other investigations that, in fact, I wrote about that in my first published article, the plans for riots down in Miami in 1972 at the convention, just as they had in 68. And agent provocateurs have been used, particularly by Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon through their administration. I mean, just noticeably. And so that they could just as well have paid people to yell and shout at Jean Kirkpatrick while the so-called libs sat there. Because I don't know any liberal has ever demonstrated against that kind of thing anyway. And before you have a reasonable discussion, considering the kinds of mechanics, Ronald Reagan has escalated the budget for domestic counterintelligence, and William Casey was behind all of this a long, long time ago, I would have to take the people that were causing the disturbance and see if they were even students at the university.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah, but this is a history that it happens, and then what it does, it promotes the righteous right to come down on the left at graduations or public ceremonies. We have a captive audience. It's like, you know, everyone's there for graduation, scolding a handful of people. And we can't really talk about why or the way people think unless we know if the people that did it represent the kind of people that you're thinking should act better.
Well, I understood that a large, a good majority of the students shouted her down.
Well, I remember when Spiro Agnew went to Greece, or Richard Nixon would travel somewhere, and all the schools were let out, or Ronald Reagan had demonstrations, you know, with people showing great acclaim and respect. When the Pope went to Milan, there were 10,000 security guards. Well, they're all waving flags and praying their hands together. You think he's a revered man, but right in Milan, In other words...
And Schultz spoke at another commencement.
Yeah, but my experience has been, through the 60s and 70s, in studying the history of these people and what's been evolved, that I have the feeling that the left, or the left of center, for the most part, doesn't even respond as much as they should. I don't mean shout or down, but what I mean is, I would have to know, up at Berkeley, if, in fact, those were people that just created a chance for Gene to have more audience, or if they logically gave reasons and didn't shout.
Well, let's say hypothetically they were not hired.
Well, you only have a 50-50 chance, and based on the history, it would be more like 60-40. So you can't hypothetically, the ones that weren't hired might have been willing to hear her, because most people that go there are willing to hear it.
Well, I know people myself who claim that they're liberals.
And they shouted her down?
Who were not there, but would have told me they would have shouted her down.
Yeah. So what?
And,
get
and
back
I
to your.
I have met people like I encounter people like at this graduation on Saturday see themselves as liberal.
Oh, and they
engage in a certain amount of soul searching. To justify a position that would make it mandatory for both sides to be heard.
Well, one of the things,
I realize I'm saying this.
I think that's fair. That say, if she's there, maybe you should split it and have both sides at the same time. You know, you get a different audience, and this is one of the things I have against talk shows on major stations like KGO in San Francisco. They have one person like Claire Sterling talking for 2 hours and giving outright lies and propaganda, and then somebody else calls in and they hang up on them when they can refute her lies. And really, they should have a format where they're like Nightline, where they're face-to-face and answer each other's questions.
Well, my point is that there are liberals in this country, even within, say, the American Civil Liberties Union, who are soul searchers and use this First Amendment right to justify what the neo-Nazi groups are doing. And I myself don't think that level of discourse is on the same level of opinion.
Well,
it is not another opinion or one opinion of many. It's anti-life, it's genocidal, and I think so people have to draw the line somewhere. Now,
are you saying
it's fine if they want to march or something, but when they're invited to a university, a university is supposed to be. Theoretically, let's say, a separate entity from the U.S. government. In other words, overtly give you the party line.
Well, why can't they have, say, a poet or a writer or some well-known composer who can elevate the young people going out, a playwright? Why don't they have people who represent some of the better things in this world and not have graduate speakers like sending messages from Lech Walesa or Gene Kirkpatrick or Schultz or Richard Pipes or Alan Watts? When they're so controversial, why should a captive audience be forced to listen to them because it's their graduation?
Well, that's why I say if someone like Kirkpatrick is going to be invited.
She was, and it was canceled.
Wanted to invite her or not? Pardon?
She was invited to Smith or Wellesley. One of the two, and it was canceled.
Well, if they have a right to force that down the students' throats, then the students have a right to respond in any way they see.
That's right. I don't think that's fair to a captive audience. If you go in voluntarily, and nobody was forced to hear at Berkeley, those that want to hear should hear, but I can't accept any conversation where people get into the theys. Whether it's the left or the right or the Jew or the black, they, because I know that there's a budget of like $22 billion just for counterintelligence. You know, that's a tremendous budget, and they just revealed a hunk of it. Besides, that includes, their various stores and publishers and franchises and plus the narcotic profits. But I can't say who made the scene against her or how it is used later, like Nixon always did with his cars being overturned on his trip to South America, and he comes out the staunch you know, savior of America because the left is having a disruption against his car. And then it turns out these were arranged. So I can't come to any generality on what the thinking person is really doing because he isn't represented. The noisemaker is the one that's represented, and they get paid to do that.
Okay. Well, do you feel that a neo-Nazi organization or representative from an organization has the right to voice their opinions? And if so, to what extent do you feel that they are entitled to the same rights under the Constitution?
No, I've never agreed to the civil liberty because, see, I don't know you or who you are, but I can't hang around your house and tell people to kill you. I can't have posters saying you're going to be killed. If you send a letter, a death threat in the mail, you are subject to arrest if it goes through the mail. But you've got a radio and offer $5,000 for a black person and on a telephone message and get pay off people to go hunting. And when people like the Nazis say, like Robert Vesco, and was involved with John Connolly, and they were going down to the Dominica Island, they planned to make it a Nazi struggle. That was an invasion that failed a few about a year ago. And they were going to bring black people in from Africa and hunt them as a chase. I say that was the head of the Klan in America and the Nazi Party combined with Canada.
And this was over a radio station.
Oh, yes, in newspaper articles and on the radio. And the Dominica thing failed, but their plan was to use it for hunting humans as game. And when you get to that level where you say, if I get in power, like, say, through elections like Hitler did, then I can use my ovens, or say in Argentina they ordered ovens to cremate 400 a day that were to be made in Florida or are being made in Florida. Jack Anderson wrote about them. I just want to know 400 a day, that's just a start. That's just one oven. What if they ordered 12 or 14 ovens? You see, and if the intent of the party is to kill, that's different than freedom of speech. You can say, I'll raise the taxes, I'll lower the taxes, I'll give stiffer prison terms.
It's beyond a, what you're saying, it's beyond an official position, whether it be left or right.
Yeah, so it's not
how to run the government or policy.
It's not a
about killing people.
That's right. It's not a position on whether you'll test clean air or worry about acid rain. Differences of opinion can run a whole range, but the intent of a particular party is to kill, say, every Jew and black and radical and misfit or aged or crippled or blind. If that's the campaign they're running, and these people automatically will be killed if they win, then they're really asking you to join in the murder. And murder, is not really, we still don't act as if it's legal. It is for our top officials. But the point is, I never agreed with the Civil Liberties Union because the parties had no platform except to kill.
Well, they're not a political party in the strict sense.
Well, if you let them be, they can be elected.
They want to be. They want to be legitimized. Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm glad I got your call. And watch for the agent provocateurs. It's hard to generalize who did it because then it gives more speeches for the other side to say, see, we defend democracy and they won't let us speak. And that was a typical Nixon-Reagan trip all through the 60s and 70s.
And I was curious. You mentioned Kirkpatrick's affiliation with the Nazis. I'm going to hang up. Can you briefly name when and where and all that details about how...
Okay. I'll give you one. Walter Rauch, who's the right-hand man of Pinochet, of the CIA, who she seized down in Chile, invented the mobile gas vans to exterminate people as they went from Eastern Europe into Russia so that he could kill a million people in their bakery trucks. Walter Rauch did 1 million, and he's the advisor. He works for the CIA and Jean Kirkpatrick's group and Pinochet in Chile, and she wants to send more money, and she speaks to them, and the top Nazis...
Her group, who is that?
The Reagan administration.
Oh, I see, okay.
Like where Carter cut off the money because 30,000 people were missing. She says, give them more money, they're fine.
Uh-huh.
Or South Africa, that's her group.
Uh-huh.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a long conversation, almost the... I'll try to answer them quicker. That was almost 20 minutes, but we'll take another call now. Hello.
Hello, Mae Brussel. This is another call from Santa Cruz.
No, that's okay.
This is Charles Wilson, and I'm not talking about the vague they that you're talking about. I talk about real issues. For instance, I ran in the election for mayor of Monterey a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
I got only over 1% of the vote, but I think more importantly, I was able to speak to the public at several forums, And when it was my turn, standing beside Mayor Gerald Fry, who had been there 20 years on the council, the last six as mayor, I told the public about his plans to double Monterey's size through annexation and a deal with a developer who said that he would have to, with the restrictions, provide the bulk of it as $250,000 housing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we know of the mayor's highway, I call it, his plans of widening the streets to seven lanes around the ocean, Del Monte Lighthouse.
Yeah, they're starting to put in a hotel over along the ocean seaside.
Yes, and then he approved doubling of the hotel size, like the San Carlos.
Yeah.
And he was in favor of the plan to put a large Southern Pacific hotel directly on the Wharf Number 2 area. So that, although he was saying that he was opening the view to the bay, I pointed out to the public at these public forums that he was opening the view to the back of the hotel, Miami Beach.
Let me give you a little hint on this one. I lived down in L.A. before I moved here. I lived in Westwood, and this was actually my first political activity. Before Kennedy was killed, we had a home, one just about two doors south of Sunset, right by Bel Air. And the Planning Commission put up a big map and showed how they were going to divide it up and put freeways and highways right past five schools in the area and turn the residential section into a piece of pie, just cut it all up. A Bruce Roberts from the Planning Commission explained this, and I was so outraged. And they did close off Westwood Boulevard and made the cars from on both sides of the university come through the streets where the children were. But what I did was, I was the only woman, and there were five men on the board to represent the homeowners. We didn't have a homeowners group. But what I did was to hire a private detective and ask him to look into the people who were going to do the building and link them to the organized crime syndicate in Las Vegas. And the construction stopped immediately. What you do is you get the names of the people who would build, you get the Dun and Bradstreet, you get their holdings, and what banks they bank in, and tap it to the Bahamas, and you'll stop it fast, see? Because the money doing it is narcotics money.
I think it is important to be active in these councils and to appear so that our representatives will see someone in front of them besides the developers.
Well, that's what I did. I was the only woman, and what I did to the meetings of the homeowners group, I took a tape recorder, and they were furious so I could tape who was selling the place out.
I know it's not too long ago where tape recording was not allowed at those sessions.
Well, they kicked me out. They didn't want a tape recorder.
It was highly suspect.
That's right. They hated it. They just hated that I did it.
And a person's appearance there, a citizen's appearance on these councils, can be a great factor in having them do the right actions that are actually more in the interest of the public and the community that they are supposed to be representing.
Well, what you have to do here, I think, is to get some kind of, like, you can get printed sheets, 100, one set a page if you get 500 of them. You really should print a little newsletter and start distributing it.
I have spent lots of money for photocopy in my activities.
The problem I found was that the merchants never have enough business. A way of life isn't anything to them. In order to sell, they call that progress, where they turn over, right? They invest in this stuff, and they want their turnover, so they bring in out-of-state business. Who is this guy that just bought over that's going to build in Seaside along the ocean? They're out to Glendale, California.
Well, they're not meeting the needs of the people. They're meeting the needs of their business.
They're going to cut off the beach. That's right.
They'll make it
look like Miami, and no one will see the ocean anymore. That's right.
Because I'm afraid that in the process, they're consuming irreplaceable natural resources, both scenic, economic, earth resources, and the petroleum and energy systems to propel all these kind of old-fashioned, large structures.
Well, you're right. I don't know the answer on how to stop it, but you're right.
Well, I know a lot of people wish for a more balanced nation at peace, and for myself, I believe such balance has to begin in our individual lifestyles and in our neighborhoods and in our communities.
Well,
that's what I've been working for.
Well, the only difference I disagree with you is when you say more people want. The truth is that you can't guess what people want. People don't even know what they want. They can't even find their shoelace in the morning. And if they really wanted anything, they would be studying the mass narcotic traffic and how the drugs come into the peninsula and what it's going to do. But you can't lump people, because I am sure that most people haven't even figured out what they want. That's why you only get 1% of the vote, because they don't know the difference between someone who preserves and somebody who exploits.
Yes, if people realized that they could go to the voting booth
and
to vote the laws that they want for the kind of community, nation, and lives.
But they never have.
No.
You look at the election in England, where people are unemployed, where the prices are high, where there's so many restrictions. The 40% of the vote voted for Margaret Thatcher, and 60% didn't vote at all or split the vote. So where are the people? They can't even get behind a candidate to get rid of what they don't want and then figure out what to do later. They split it up, just like if you don't like Ronald Reagan, the Democrats will have all these other people. They'll coax, you know, Jesse Jackson, the America needs a black man. We have all these black mayors, and they'll splinter every vote, and they don't have enough sense to get rid of. They know what they don't want, but they don't know how to do it, and they haven't figured it out yet. So you just do the best you can. You can't gauge people.
I think that the exploited and the exploitees are playing a game like the slaves.
But they always have. You're absolutely.
And sometimes, often, May, I feel that I'm on a bench in the hold of a ship pushing against an oar that's going out through a hole in the wall, a portal into the water. And I say, hey, this is not a good deal. I don't like it. And the person next to me says, quiet, you're making trouble.
Yeah, just enjoy the ride. Huh? Yeah, well, that's why the genius of Samuel Beckett in his plays like Endgame or Waiting for Godot. In each of those plays, he has a slave master holding a whip and a slave who takes the whipping. And the man who does the master is blind. But if he drops his whip, the slave leans down and hands it to him like ham and cloth.
Yes.
Some people have to play slave. They've been slaves all their life to their parents or their family or their teachers or their church. And if they have a decision-making role, there is much lost. They need
individual self-development in this new age, new culture idea of physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional growth on a daily basis is important instead of the old-fashioned way of doing something we don't like for 20, 30 years, golden age to open up for us.
Well, new age is only important if it makes your gray matter work. If it's an escape, then you may as well.
Well, as a fad, it can only be a first stage.
But probably most people use it.
All the tapes, the self-improvement, and the fads. Well, May, before I go, I'd like to tell the people that there's a lot happening up here in Santa Cruz where I have moved permanently to live and work.
Well, where would they get in touch with you?
Well, through the information for the City of Santa Cruz, Charles Wilson.
Okay. Well, you send me notices and maybe I put them on the air during the break.
I would like to find any outlet in Monterey area that would accept the Santa Cruz Sentinel newspaper. I feel that that Santa Cruz Sentinel newspaper is not available anywhere. One copy at the library, but other than that, is not available for sale anywhere. And I would like to invite anyone who would accept sale of a bundle of those Santa Cruz Sentinels on a daily basis.
Well, that's not for me to put a thing in hand about Monterey Herald and see if you can get somebody to do that.
Okay, well, this is my ad right here.
Okay, well, listen.
I'm sure happening people are listening to you, May.
Okay, good. Well, you keep listening. I'll do what I can for you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Charles Wilson. He had some very good ideas when he lived here on the peninsula, and he'd go to the city meetings and take an interest, and he believed that they should be tape recorded, and he'd take cassettes into hospitals and where people are laid up so that they could hear how their particular representatives were voting and inform them on the issues and even have it on the radio. So you hear the council meetings, city council meetings, or the supervisors, and know how you're being represented at a local level. 375-3082. If you want to call and ask a question, I have time for me one more question. It's 5 of 8, and then we swing to World Watchers and put off the questions till next week. I brought one article in from the London Times. Will Big Brother turn off the bathwater? And it has to do with the electronic giants. They're going to take the first steps and decide how much appliances you can use in your home and turn it off by remote control. They'll measure your electricity or your water, your gas and water and electricity. And when you've come to your quota, off it goes. And it's suggesting sort of a Big Brother that they'll know what everybody is using instantly. And when you reach it, there'll be some kind of a computer. I save a whole box, a section of articles on recent repressions or ideas that could become repressive. And that's one of them that I thought was interesting, the possibility that... Then it's the telephone, and I think I mentioned last week or the week before in Romania, it's against the law to have a typewriter. You have to have permission for a typewriter, and I guess in the Western world, if it ever came to a real fascist regime and they stopped the copying machines and the typewriter and raised the telephone rates, and it's a means of cutting off communication from people. The U.S. News and World Report had a short one-page article, a comment about Norman Mailer. I don't know if he gave a graduation speech this year or not, but he has a new book that just came out. I haven't read it. I don't like novels. I like nonfiction. But this article is a conversation with Norman Mailer, and it says something has been stolen from us that we can't name. And he's talking about computers and the sciences and the studies that we're going into now that are taking the human things away from us, that the buildings, he says, are ugly, they're less attractive. There's a lot of frozen food that comes out. There's no smell of cooking things anymore. And we sit behind computers. We praise them. And we use plastic for so many things, the plastic wrappings, the plastic society. We hear about it. We take it for granted, synthetic and plastic items. But he says if someone's living in total apathy, he's willing to risk extinction, that when you get apathetic, it's worse. You can't respond then to things around you, and then the power structure can take you or what you have. And then he said technology, the end of technology should be useful and shouldn't leech our energy, that we're a culture of addiction. And he talks about drugs for the nervous system and pills and medicines and the way we survive on so many kinds of addictions, and that people are less alive, that these drugs keep us less alive. And then he said we're interrupted every 10 or 15 minutes, and then it'll be 2 to 3 seconds. That was always one of my big objections to television, was that I said we'd raise a seven-minute generation, because you'd see something for 7 minutes and then interruption, another 7 minutes. And the children, this generation is brought up on television, if they had it, were interrupted by commercials, and they still are. And you see a show, except for on box office or some special programs, they're interrupted, always interrupted. And I get so mad, I even actually stopped watching them. I can't stand the interruptions, and it isn't fair to your system or your thinking or your feeling. And he said that it's hard for people to relax. Air is polluted, and the rooms are congested. There's more people, and that we're not considering these things, and that every day that we allow them to go on, something is taken from us. And I agree with that. I think that apathy is a dangerous disease because, as I say, when you don't care and you say, I don't care, or I don't care what country's in power, I don't care who's speaking, I don't care what movies are made, the quality doesn't bother me, whatever's the best I'll watch tonight. The minute you stop being angry about the junk you're getting, people are more conscious of junk food now, but there's junk entertainment and junk movies and junk actors and television. Part of you goes, part of you dies when you reduce yourself to those simple things. Well, now it is 8 o'clock, and we're going to turn off the telephone lines. That is enough. I talked a long time on that one call, but we'll begin with World Watchers, and we'll get back to the telephone next week. We'll begin with the next program.